Hi folks, welcome to 2 Feet Apart. This is an intersectionally inclusive space where community meets storytelling. It's a space that is nurtured by vulnerability and the sharing of our stories because they are our greatest strengths and our strongest powers. With that in mind, happy listening. Hi everyone, and welcome back to 2 Feet Apart with me, your host, Peachy Patra. You know her, you love her, you've heard her before. Welcome back, Jordan.
Hey everybody, nice to be back.
So excited to have you on. And it's always nice to have our conversations recorded because I feel like you're one of those people that I always have really good, like, thought-provoking conversations with, and then afterwards I'm like, dang, that would have been good in a podcast.
Well, I'm really glad that you don't record me all the time because invasion of privacy.
Listen. Okay, so today I really want to touch on some of the intersectionalities of the work that you do and life as a Black woman and kind of all-encompassing all the things. So in what ways do you navigate the intersectionality of race, gender, and socioeconomic factors in your work and your personal life?
You just jumped right into it like that.
I did.
Okay. What ways do I navigate the intersectionality of race, gender, and what?
Socioeconomic factors in your work and personal life.
I think, like, starting with personal life, navigating, like, being a single mom at one point and, like, being a, like, Black single mom and trying to, like, prove myself in an industry that is, like, very much one-sided in terms of, like, race, and trying to, like, get your foot in the door and overcome that. And then I guess that kind of leads into, like, work life, is that it's, like, sometimes difficult to navigate when I think of, like, a lot of the lower paying jobs in my area. It's a lot of, like, ethnically diverse, and as you move up in the chain, I'm more of a minority. And then as you move up and up, and, like, different people that I work with, it's, like, non-existent to see, when you do see somebody of, like, color or different race in, like, certain roles, then you're like, oh my gosh, they made it, right? Compared to, like, yeah, whereas, like, yeah, I think a lot of, like, different, like, places that I've worked, whether it's, like, for justice or for child and family services, there's, like, lower paying classifications where that's where, like, a lot of the minority is. So I think, like, navigating that is just, like, pushing myself to be better and to, like, be transparent and, like, open with people. And then, like, trying to, like, advocate for myself in those roles and, like, whether that's, like, the socioeconomic part of it is, like, advocating for, like, a higher raise or things like that, or to, like, have a diverse work environment. And being female, like, a lot of my roles within, like, the social work field have been, like, maybe mainly, like, female oriented. But I think, like, if you flip that switch, like, just introducing, like, men into the roles and, like, the value they bring to a work environment too.
Mm-hmm. That's really fascinating how, like, you've even noticed in your line of work that the kind of the more upwards you go, the more essentially whitewashed it is. And I think when you can you elaborate a little bit more when you talk about, like, you mentioned, like, female-based roles.
So, like, I think a lot of, like, when you look at, like, human services and, like, social services, a lot of those, the people in those roles are female. Mm-hmm. But then if you look at, like, for example, like, governmental roles, a lot of the people, like, the ministers and all of that are mostly males. Mm-hmm. But then, like, if you look in the office, like, there's one male for 16 females in the office. Same with like when I worked at Child and Family Services, just like very much female based. And I mean, I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but I think like a lot of the people making the rules are in a male role or are male. A lot of people making those policies and that sort of thing, whereas the majority of frontline workers anyways are female.
Interesting. Do you have a pivotal moment or experience that shaped your perspective on social justice and advocacy?
I wouldn't say like one specific moment. I think there's like a little bit of spread experiences throughout, whether that's being like knocked down again or not feeling like you're kind of like good enough, feeling like you do have to prove something, like you're just kind of like a stereotype, or at least feeling that way. And so trying to like overcome that stereotype of like, especially like when I think of like school and like I went to school with so many white people, like I was the only black person in the school. So like, it was always like set out for me that you're going to be like, as soon as I had kids young, like 18, it was like, oh, you're just like a statistic of a single mom household, black girl. Right. So just like, I think those different experiences have shaped kind of my advocacy for different people to continue no matter what people say, if they're negative or they're trying to tell you like you can't do it, overcoming that and being like, actually, I can. I don't know how many times people were like, oh, don't you want to just like stay home with your kids, or, you know, you're not going to like make it out there kind of thing. And so having the ability to be like, actually, the reason I like fought so hard is so I could be there for my kids, so I could provide stability and kind of overcome those stereotypes and those experiences. So I think like there wasn't, I don't think, one pivotal moment. But I think there's just like an accumulation of experiences that have kind of shaped the way like I even case manage or different things like that in my roles, various roles. And just like taking into perspective like where people are coming from and understanding, when it comes to like advocacy, being able to advocate for people on a human to human level. I think a lot of times too, when you're looking at like social work, there's like this hierarchy that like you're being told what to do, but I'm very like transparent and open with people, and try to meet them where they're at so that I can advocate for them the best way I can, and then understanding how my own experiences contribute to like, whether it's biases or different things like that. So understanding that like to move forward, we kind of have to be at a human to human level, and advocating for like the rights of like families and people that I work with, whether that's in a meeting with my supervisor, whether that's like a systemic overview of kind of what's going on at work.
And just to backtrack a little, you had mentioned that like a lot of people making these roles and positions aren't the same kind of people that are hired into them. So you had mentioned that, you know, a lot of these government officials and policymakers making these roles in social justice are male, and a lot of the people hired into these roles are female. But in terms of being a Black woman in your field, have you encountered any unique challenges or barriers, and how have you overcame them? Overcome.
I knew what you meant. I knew what you meant. I think like, I know I say like a lot, so good luck editing that out. But
I'm going to leave it in.
Okay. I think having to like prove myself a little more, and sometimes like not feeling valued in terms of like experience or opinion. like I said before, like a lot of the lower classification jobs are more ethnically visible, whereas like as you move up the line, also like I don't think we can like ever really overcome the challenges. I think it's like a continual process, in different aspects. So I know, right now there's some policies being made, in my work, and they say it's like supposed to help access, but it feels like a lot of barriers for like marginalized communities. So there's like different mandatory requirements people need to meet, and these mandatory requirements aren't a fit all in the box. And I think a lot of it is like deterring people, or someone has a language barrier, different aspects. I think a lot of times there's roadblocks put up in different roles that I've worked in, just to like the simplicity of like accessing these resources is more difficult.
I think it's really fascinating that you said, you don't really overcome them. Like there's always going to be something that comes up, which I think is something that a lot of people don't always recognize. They think, okay, you've started in this role. Yeah, you had to overcome a few barriers, blah, blah, blah. You're good now. But that's not the case because there's always going to be, especially as you continue in that role, especially as you interact with new people, new situations come up. It's kind of a continuum that you have to continue facing, right?
Yeah, for sure. And I think like whether it's at work or whether it's out in the community or different like society in general, there's always going to be like this continual process of like self-improvement, but then also just like what changes you want to see.
So what changes do you want to see?
In terms of changes, I think like just working on myself to understanding like where I'm coming from and then advocating for changes in the different areas, whether it's like individual, if you're thinking about communities, what can I do in my community? What can I do in my, what impact can I have on like the societies or governments? So like I know like specifically on like social work, the system is like three parts. So like micros, family, individuals, meso, communities, macro societies, government. So just thinking about like what three parts and where can I play a role in those three parts, whether it's that advocating like we were talking about before, advocating for clients, advocating for myself, advocating for my community, advocating at work to have like a more diverse work environment, advocating, yeah, and like knowing where that is going to be effective and like what can I do, and if we as a community like work together, can that like help with that macro, like the society and the government, we like all come together, you know?
So how do you, advocacy is one of those things, and I think I've spoken about it in a previous podcast episode. Advocacy is one of those things that can really take a lot of like time and energy out of you. And it's one of those things that can sometimes feel like a thankless job. And it can sometimes be something that you start and then there really is no finish line. You just have to keep continuing with it. How do you factor in rest and self-care throughout advocating for clients and families that you're working with?
This wasn't on those questions, Patra.
Sorry, not sorry.
How do I factor in self-care? Is that the question?
Yeah, rest and self-care.
Okay. I think, like, if I'm being honest,
We want honesty.
yeah, I think if I'm being honest, sometimes that's difficult. Like, as you, I have my work life. I'm advocating for clients all the time. I've got my kids at home, so I'm like advocating for them, whether it's at school or like different areas of their life or things like that. I think like going to bed early sometimes, like 9 o'clock, 8 o'clock, finding time for myself, like things that I enjoy, whether it's as simple as like I joined volleyball on Sundays, or like now I've joined a softball league. I have never played softball, but like first base, here I come, you know?
Look at you.
Yeah. I don't know how this fat ass is gonna run, but we'll see. So like just like little things like that, whether it's like joining things that I know like isn't centered around work or isn't centered around my kids. It's solely like I get out of the house and I get to like be with people and not be talking about my kids. Cause I think a lot of times as a mom too, you like get together with your mom friends and then you're just like talking about your kids. And even though you kind of want a break from them, or like you get together with your colleagues, whether it's on a lunch break or something, and you're talking about work. So like, it's like one thing to like get away from like two things that like majorly define me, but aren't, you know? And I think a lot of the process that I've had to take is like, who am I when I don't have work and I'm not a mom, you know? And like working on myself in that way. And I think like if we take that back to like race and stuff too, is like, who am I? Like, obviously I'm a visible minority, but like growing up in a white community with a white parent. And I think we talked about that on one of your podcast episodes too, is like, how do I take that? And like, what does that mean for me? Especially when we think about like what's all going on in the world today, and like how that affects me, and maybe I just like throw it to the side. But I think that's kind of like making time for that self-care and ensuring that moving forward you're like always setting aside a time, because it's important.
I think I recently spoke about this with my therapist, and I was saying that for me, like, this might sound ridiculous, but date nights are a form of self-care, and I'm not in a relationship, for those that don't know. So these are often like first dates, but I find that they're a form of self-care for the exact reason you mentioned. It's an excuse for me to dress up and look nice, which I love to do. But then I'm forced to not talk about my child the entire time, because I go out with my friends, whether they have kids or not, we're talking about our kids the entire time, or my kid the entire time. I go out with coworkers, like you said, you're talking about work the entire time, regardless, even if it's something that you're like, yeah, let's go for coffee. And then you're talking about this client that you had and this campaign that you were working on and things like that. But I find that when I go on dates, the last thing they want to do is hear me babble on about my kid. The last thing they want to do is hear me babble on about these work campaigns and these clients and these brands that I'm working with. So I think that for me, that form of self-care is similar in that that's how I make time for myself is, and then don't get me wrong, I still need like my recharge time alone afterwards, but taking that time to like go on dates and have adult conversations that don't involve work and kids. And it's like, oh, this is literally just about me. This is Patra.
Yeah.
It's so,
people wanted to like know you versus like, again, those like pivotal, like main like roles in your life, but getting to know you as a person is, I think, important too.
And so you had mentioned like, who am I really? Outside of being, you know, an employee, outside of being a mom. And Will Smith asks this question, and he asks it in the context of, you know, he recognizes that he's always, I'm going to misquote this terribly, but he's always this 15-year-old.
Do you want me to Google it?
No, it's okay. I'm going to try and paraphrase it. But he references a time when he was younger and his heart was broken, and he realizes that like oftentimes that's who he really is. That's who he's operating from. So I'm curious, for you, who are you really?
Just laid it on hard.
I did.
Who am I really? That's a really good question, Patra.
I can share mine if that's helpful.
Yeah, share yours and then I will go after you, because that's okay. A really good question.
When I was in, and I might have shared this in a previous episode with you because it would have been relevant, but when I was I'm going to say maybe 5 or 6 years old. I'm trying to remember which house I lived in because then I would remember how old I was. But I think 5 or 6, and I was being bullied at school for being Black. And I did not understand because I go home and pretty much everyone in my family is white, except my older sister, who's lighter than me. And so I'm just baffled because I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, my parents are white. Like, I don't understand. And I just distinctly remember my dad putting me up on the counter, like sitting me on the counter and talking to me about race and explaining that like he's not my biological father. And I find that like anytime I'm like interacting with something cultural or I'm just trying to like understand why I have big feelings about something going on, like oftentimes that root comes back to like that same feeling that I had as like a little girl being sat on the counter being explained why kids are being racist towards me. And it's because I am Black, even though this man standing in front of me is not my biological father. And so it's the same feeling for me that comes up.
I think like you're saying, who are you really? I think like stripping it down, like you said, when people are like bullying you and things, growing up in like small white town in Alberta, obviously being the only like Black one in the community, definitely can relate to your story there. And I think when I like really look at like who am I gotta like go back to like who do I want to be and like what do I want to work towards, whether it's like, and that's some things like I pride myself in my work and my roles is like being transparent, being like a calm person. I remember like helping this person who was like in a crisis, and I remember them being like, you have such like a calming personality. And I'm like, oh, I never really realized that, but like I'm glad that I could like calm you down. And like just the other day, some woman that I assisted, she emailed me and was like, thanks for being human yesterday when I was like crying in your office and things like that. So like that's what I kind of pride myself in, and that's kind of who I want to be and who I see myself as, is somebody that as much as like take care of myself, but wants to be there for other people too, in that like sense of a calming presence or yeah.
I like that. So that who are you really is really just like the essence of who you are.
Yeah. Can put it that way.
Yeah. And I would say that that's definitely how I would define you as well. You have a very like grounding presence. And even from like the moment we met, it's always been, especially because like, you know, meeting a sibling later in life, I remember being so nervous. And then the second I met you, like, I was like,
I remember like driving and be like, is that her? Am I gonna pick up the wrong Black girl?
I know, every time I saw a red van, I was like, oh, I'm about to hop in. And then I was like, wait, no, that's not her. Yeah. And so I think it was one of those things, I was so nervous. And then we met and I was just like, oh, this feels familiar. Like, it feels like you bring like a sense of home kind of feeling.
Oh, that's so nice of you.
You're welcome. In your opinion, what role can people play in helping dismantle this systemic racism that we've talked about? And how can people help support the empowerment of people in these social justice roles?
I think in a sense of like dismantling, is education is a big thing. Not being naive and being willing and open-minded to grow and see other people's perspectives. I think a lot of time when you think of like racism, things like that, it comes from a place of not understanding and a place of arrogance. I think like in terms of like supporting, there's so many things that people can like do within their communities, even just like face-to-face conversations, workplaces, having like different diversity hiring and different things like that. I think like recognizing different cultural practices and how they like come into play and can be valued. compared to like what black and white thinking like Western society has is like right or wrong versus like being open-minded. So I think that's one of the biggest things people can do is be open-minded, hear people's stories and kind of have a place of understanding of where people are coming from, and that not everyone's going to share or be able to have the same reaction like you do. I think a lot of times people are like, oh, they should suck it up, or different comments like that, where it's like, just because you might have been able to suck it up doesn't mean that like everyone else has that resiliency built in or different things like that.
For sure. I think that's really, really important is that last bit that you mentioned, in that not everyone has the same reactions you do. Not everyone has the same, like, everyone has such different life experiences that have shaped the way that they engage with the world. And so being mindful of that and recognizing that that can help explain some of the behaviors and things and patterns that we see in other people.
Yeah, for sure.
I saw this one quote, and this it kind of cracked me up, but it was like, you better leave me alone before I tell you about like a behavioral pattern that you don't notice that other people are aware of, or something like that. And it was like, it was supposed to be a joke, but yeah, it cracks me up because there's always those things that we don't notice about ourselves that are like, why am I like this? That other people notice, and it's just a product of the environment that we were raised in.
I think like that too, and like even stuff that you do that you're not aware of, that like you're learning. So like I know I need like an ADHD assessment because I always like interject in conversations or like just like listen to like reply versus listen to listen sometimes, and like different things like that that I'm like, maybe I can like get this checked out, because there's just like things about yourself, yeah, that you don't notice until you actually like take a look, and you're like, oh, maybe I need to change this or be more open to hearing or different things like that. Is for myself, anyways. That's what I'm like seeing as an adult, is like, again, as I'm working through like working on myself, being able to like identify where I need that growth. And I think that's part of that like self-mastery that we Maslow's hierarchy, that self level of self-mastery that you're just trying to like obtain, but just being aware of those things and how that might come off to other people too.
So good. And I think, like you said, being aware of like the mastery and understanding that, but also like understanding how that affects other people and the people around you.
For sure, and understanding, again, not everyone knows, not everyone can handle as much as you do. I know like a lot of times like I use dark humor, and sometimes it's based on my own life, and it'll just be in the middle of a conversation. I'll be like, oh yeah, this happened, and people will be like so shocked, like, what? And I'm like, yeah, it's okay, like
You're like, it was a joke.
yeah, like I remember like me and my best friend growing up, both of our dads passed away, and I remember this guy being like, oh, like when you ask your mom something, she says no, so you ask your dad. And I remember being like, I don't have a dad. And my friend was like, yeah, I don't have a dad either. And then the guy is like, what? And we're like, just a joke, like don't worry, we're not that offended. So like I think like understanding that, even like rubbing off some of the trauma on other people too. Like I know like in work too, deal with a lot of heavy stuff, especially my line of work. So like I know venting and stuff to my coworkers can sometimes be helpful, but I don't want to like rub off things I've heard and like put it on my coworkers who may not be able to handle it as effectively as I can.
So important. That's amazing. And I feel like every time I've had you on, we've kind of had these conversations about the work that you do and things like that, but we rarely talk about like who you are. And so we only have a few minutes left, but I wanted to just chat about a little bit about you. So is there anything that you want to share, or do you want me to just kind of put you on the spot with some questions?
You can just put me on the spot and I'll let you know if I don't know how to answer them.
Okay. This chapter of your life, what would you call it? If it was a book, sorry, I should have included that in the question. If your life was a book, what would you call this chapter?
I'd say like the journey to self-discovery.
What are you doing? What are things that you're doing to help you along that journey?
I think like finding things that I enjoy. Again, trying to not be just a mom or just a social worker or those sort of things. So like finding out what do I enjoy. I know when you'd ask me that when like the boys were younger and I was like, I like watching Paw Patrol. No, like, you know what I mean? Because that's what my kid watches or whatever, right? Like when people would ask what your hobbies are. So like finding things that I actually enjoy doing, whether it's like gardening. Right now I've got a little garden plot in my garage with my little
Oh my
seedlings grow
gosh.
in. Going to like different sporting, like whatever, like volleyball and that sort of thing, like I said, just different things like that. So like I can kind of find where's my groove, because one day my kids aren't gonna be there and I gotta not just be a empty nester that has nothing to do. She's gotta, you know, figure it out. So yeah, who am I without those big roles?
Yeah. And can I just say, I'm so proud of you for signing up for softball. I have been wanting to sign up for like a rec soccer league or a basketball league or something near me, but it's so far out of my comfort zone that I have yet to bring myself to do it. Because I'm like, first of all, my athletic skills are really limited. I work out, but like my coordination is not there when it comes to like hand eye and a ball moving towards me.
Wow.
And so it intimidates me. So I'm really proud of you for like
Oh,
signing up for
thank
that. I
you.
didn't know you did that.
Yeah, I signed up for softball and then volleyball. Like I said, volleyball, it's like just fun. Rec league, and then there's like an intermediate league that I subbed for. So just like
Look at
finding
you.
ways to like get out and be active. And volleyball was intimidating. There's like a guy from Ukraine who was a professional volleyball player there. And so like
Cheater.
he's like 7 foot and I'm like 5'2" trying to defend my net. Yeah, that didn't work out.
But you're trying.
It's just for like fun, right? So
Yeah.
just yeah, looking forward to like softball. Like I said, we'll see if I can even run my ass to first base.
You got
See.
this. You got this.
Yeah.
What was I gonna say? So I know that the listeners haven't heard a ton of like your story. Maybe they've gathered bits and pieces from a few different episodes you've been on, but what is something about your story that you think is important for other people to hear?
That's such a, I think I have a pretty big story of so many aspects that have shaped who I am from like, and so relatable to like so many of like your viewers and other people that I've encountered. I think like I've touched base on like being a single mom, being the only black kid growing up. Yeah, I think there's, I don't know what aspects of my life I think like being bullied, we talk about like the Me Too movement and things like that. Like, there's just so many aspects of my life that I think we could have a whole podcast episode just on like my experiences. And I don't like want to take up all your time talking about my life. But I
Well, now
think,
we need another episode together.
yeah, I think this is just like prelude to episode. Let's talk about Patra's sister's life.
Yeah. Instead of having you on as a an expert, I want you on as a personal storyteller.
Okay, that would do. I was gonna write a book at one point, an autobiography about my life. I didn't know how many people would read it, but I do got the first like 3 pages done. I think I began
Look at
writing it in
you.
fifth grade.
I
I had
feel
a
like,
cover
yeah,
page
this
and
is gonna get
everything.
juicy.
So I think like there's so many different things that have like shaped me to who I am, so many different emotions, so many different stages, like my emo phase and my
Oh,
like
relatable.
party phase and my right, like so many different phases that like I think so many people can relate to, and different aspects and experiences that have like molded kind of who I want to be, that self-discovery, like I said, who I don't want to be or go back to. And then who I like foresee myself in the future at 65 years old that I want to be, you know?
Yeah. Well, I love it. Different versions of you. They
Yeah.
all come together.
We could write my chapter book. This is just this chapter, but we're on chapter like 30 now, so there's 30 chapters we've missed.
We'll catch up. We'll catch up. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to join me and to share a little bit more about your work and a little bit more about who you are. We're seeing glimpses, so I can't wait to finally get to sit you down, and maybe this will be in person when I come visit you. But to share your story.
I appreciate you having me. It's always nice to hear your beautiful voice. Just know that I'm always here, and I don't know about you sitting me down, but we can talk about it.
Fine.